Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Johnny Weaver. This is our salute to Kim Kardashian.
Really?
Yes. A show, the entire show dedicated to
I suspect you haven't missed an episode.
I missed them all. I have no idea what
Do you even know what channel
yet.
It's on?
No.
You don't even get that TV. You don't even
No,
have
I have a
TV.
Rooftop antenna. I get Kentucky Educational TV and three
So
networks.
You play Keeping Up with the Neighbors. You've got binoculars.
I don't know what that means. Well, you know from where I am, I can't even see them. But here's the reason. Back last week, Kim Kardashian was on the Not My Job appearance. That was the guest slot for the show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Which is one of our, you know.
This is one that
this
we...
This is your brother's show for us,
Yeah,
right?
We think that's it's a pretty decent show. It's got
some
great
features. Why
would
they ask her to be on it?
Well, because, and they mentioned this.
You know, she breaks things, like the internet.
Oh, well, but...
She broke that show.
I think the thing is that that's true. They really got into trouble on it. But they thought, look, she's a personality. She's in the news. They were a little bit surprised she agreed to be on the show. Not a great appearance, but she answered the questions.
She has two moms.
She was doing fine. The problem was their listeners. Several hundred listeners wrote to the ombudsman, wrote in, threatened to pull their donations. Here's one. It says, the Kardashians represent much of what is wrong with America today, and I listen to NPR to get away from Kardashian-like garbage. Another one said, now you've given that low-level, self-centered, ego-driven mentality a place in public radio world, not a real or in-depth look at how self-promotion affects societal thinking or some such analysis, but hey, Kim, let's talk about your busy life. The real question, what was your thinking behind doing a show with Kim Kardashian as a guest? And Michael Danforth, the show's producer, who has had a very good track record on making decisions, was baffled.
Okay.
He was baffled. So at any rate, we decided...
Well, at some point, I mean, he had to figure that he was actually helping her because he was taking her and putting her in front of more astute listeners. So he actually was raising, you know, he was elevating her, he was introducing her to culture.
So we decided that if by golly, if somebody makes a mistake, the least we can do is repeat the mistake. So here, cue the music, Spencer, and we're going to, now we're going to talk about Kim Kardashian. Kim Kardashian West was born October 21st in 1980. She's an American television and social media personality, a socialite and model. In 2010, she was reported to be the highest paid reality television personality with an estimated earning of $6 million.
Did that include anything, any of the proceeds from the sex tape?
I don't know anything about that, actually.
Mm-hmm. She is, you know, funny. The interesting, you know, all of the, there's certain...
Okay, stop the music.
What?
Go. Oh, that's fine. You want to talk about Kim Kardashian?
Oh, we'll talk. We can talk afterward. But it is interesting that she's done absolutely nothing.
I don't know how you can say that. She is a social media personality, a socialite. She is the Kitty Carlisle of our era.
Who's that?
See, now my listeners will remember Orson Bean and Kitty Carlisle.
You're right. I don't
as
listen
being
to you.
TV personalities. And I have so much respect for Kitty Carlisle, I actually named my Kitty Carlisle. True story. But at any rate, she's a social media personality.
She's done absolutely nothing. She is an entertainer who doesn't, I mean, I don't want to say she's done entertaining. I'm not trying to come down on the lady. I mean, she's obviously intelligent in the fact that she's learned how to use her skill set to make her money. But she has other things she uses to make money too. I mean, let's be honest. I mean,
that, I think we've exhausted the topic of Kim Kardashian.
Exactly. I mean, but I mean, you know, there's certain things, Tony, reality. Survivor, you've got a host and a bunch of people who play the game, right? Big Brother, you got people who play the game. You got this whole next generation of reality shows is about groups of people and they become personalities. I mean, interesting, even Counting Cars or Pawn Stars or something, it's really about the personalities, but the content is what made you watch it, right? You want to see what people are pawning, but in the end, you're watching it because you want to see Chumlee, right? It's not, you know, it's not because, but the interesting, the Kardashians and that level of social shows has nothing to do with really anything other than just how they live their lives. And I find it fascinating that so many people are just that interested in that because I personally am not.
Thank you. First article.
Okay, go ahead.
Obstetrics and Gynecology, June 5th. All right, so you like tattoos. I mean, we like...
Have we started the show?
Yes.
Would you
like information.
Introduce me, please?
Wow. Did we ever get off?
I mean, I was thinking you could introduce me. I could talk about the website. We could have a sponsor. I mean, there's these little things in life that we could do that we've been doing for 12 years.
I'm desperate to get you to stop talking about Kim Kardashian.
Trust me. Let me tell about the audio of the show, and I will quit talking about her.
Thank you very much from the University of Kentucky. Is this not a terrible way to start the show? I honestly.
I'm telling you, that lady breaks things.
She messed me up. I'll say that. Manager Communications Infrastructure here from the University of Kentucky to talk about our website, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the shows at WMKY.org. That is Morehead State Public Radio's website. Jump on there. Find Health Matters in the menu structure. Go and look at all the more recent shows. Pull down the audio. Listen to it. Put it on your device, whatever it may be, and listen to it over and over. Take it in your car. Give it to a friend. Send a friend a link. There's so much you can do with that audio. It's all right there at WMKY.org. And oh, by the way, take a look at Morehead State Public Radio's website. I'm sure there's other shows that you can listen to out there that you will enjoy. And maybe even if you catch it on the live stream, you might even be able to listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, even if you're not in the listening area. So we would definitely say go to WMKY.org. After that, interact with the show. Get in on some of the humor. Get in on some of the information. Go to Facebook.com. Do a search for HM Radio Show, Health Matters Radio Show, or just put in Facebook.com/HM Radio Show, and that will take you to our fan page. The fan page is where you get to interact with the show, or you can read about some of the articles we talk about on the show. You can talk about things that are timely in the media that Tony posts to the site. You can leave us some comments, leave us some feedback, suggest some show topics. Maybe you've got a burning question that you'd just like to get answered. We typically hope it's not about your grandma's medical condition, because those are not really good to answer on Facebook. But certainly, if you've got a question that's just stumping you about healthcare that you'd like to get answered, Facebook.com/HM Radio Show is where you can interact and post it.
And hopefully we'll get some, what actually the purpose of the Salute to Kim Kardashian show was, we were thinking, well, maybe we can get more than one person to comment on our Facebook page at a time if we did something out. Outrageous. Our sponsor for today's show, the Covered Cancer Screening Services. Who can say what the ACA will pay? We can say that because we have a information sheet from the Kentucky Cancer Consortium talking about cancer prevention and screening, these benefits of the Affordable Care Act. Now, the Affordable Care Act, one of their tenets was that health maintenance should be given to all people through their insurance plan with no out-of-pocket costs. And they base these on the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force guidelines. And so here's what is covered under the Affordable Care Act. If you have an ACA insurance plan, here's what's covered with no out-of-pocket costs. First of all, breast cancer screening, age 40 to 49, a mammogram every 1 to 2 years. Age 50 to 74, a mammogram every 2 years, unless a doctor recommends more often. You can also get the BRCA 1 and 2 genetic testing. If you have a family history of breast or ovarian cancer, you can possibly self-refer for mammogram. Some insurances allow you that. You can possibly get ultrasound for women with dense breast tissue. Some insurance plans allow that, but those are the breast cancer screening benefits. Do one more, and then we'll save the rest for next time. Cervical cancer screening, ages 21 to 29, pap smear every 3 years. Ages 30 to 65, pap smear every 3 years or every 5 years if you get the human papillomavirus, the HPV testing, along with the pap smear. No HPV testing for women under age 30. Many times they may test positive, but then clear the virus later on. And no screening for people who have had a hysterectomy if the cervix has been removed and it was not due to cancer. Those are some of the screening benefits of the Affordable Care Act. Our sponsor, Coverage Screening Services. Who can say what the ACA will pay? Now, back to the tattoo.
Hey.
What?
How hard was that? Announce
once
the co-host.
Once you redirected my attention, once you stopped spouting off about reality shows, which keep in mind, I have a rooftop antenna. I don't get any of them.
Well, it's, you know, it's with you, knowing you as you know, we're friends, it's worse than you have a rooftop antenna. You don't watch TV even when you have a rooftop antenna. You just don't. And that's just not your nature. It's not, you'd much rather be cutting firewood.
Right. So right in. The show started poorly. We started with a salute to Kim Kardashian.
It wasn't poor.
Surely to goodness.
Why would you suggest it was poor?
You can write into our Facebook page and leave a disgusting comment.
No.
Or a discuss dead comment. That would
no,
be better.
No, no,
I think so.
Tell us how much you enjoyed that first segment because, you know, let's face it, it was funny.
Tattoos.
It's making you laugh just thinking about it.
It's making me embarrassed. Obstetrics and Gynecology, June 5th, University of California in Irvine.
And this is with tattoos?
This was a report of a woman. This
is a fascinating report.
Well, you've got to listen to it. That's the only way you can do it. 32-year-old woman had cancer of her cervix, originally diagnosed.
Okay.
And this woman also had 14 tattoos on her leg. She was a mother of four. Over 11 years, she had gotten 14 different tattoos. A Black Panther. The phrase, I've got baggage with the image of a suitcase on her leg. She puts, I've got baggage with the image of a suitcase.
Do we have time for all 14 of these?
The title of a children's show called Yo Gabba Gabba. I'm sure you
never heard of it.
You've got cable.
Nope.
You love watching reality.
I'm too busy
watching Gabba Gabba. Okay. And the most recent tattoo 2 years before. Now, the first thing you do when you have a case of cervical cancer, you do imaging to see if it is spread. So you look at the lymph nodes in the pelvis. And they did that with a combination PET CT scan. A PET scan, positron emission tomography scan, looks at the metabolism of the tissues. Is this tissue dead? Is it not doing anything? Is it live and metabolically active? Of course, the CT looks at the anatomy. Is there a bump there? So you see the bump. You see whether the bump is metabolically active or not. And she had positive lymph nodes. Lots of positive lymph nodes. They were all over, looked positive. So they diagnosed her with metastatic cervical cancer. They took out 40 lymph nodes. 40 lymph nodes.
40.
When they examined the lymph nodes, there was no cancer. What there was tattoo pigment in the lymph nodes. The tattoo ink had migrated from her legs up into those lymph nodes and made them look like they were loaded with cancer.
Ow.
21% of adults report at least one tattoo in 2013, these nodes apparently light up with the tracer they use for the PET scan.
Okay, so what happens when you remove 40 lymph nodes? Well, how does that affect me?
Well,
is 40 a lot?
Yeah. Lymph is the tissue, it's basically the waste tissue that drains out of your legs. It drains up into these lymph nodes. Also, the waste that drains off the cervix. So, cervical cancer would drain into these lymph nodes. If you interfere with the drainage by removing all those lymph nodes, yeah, there could be some effects from that. Now, keep in mind, she's also had surgery to remove the cervix. Cancer anyway, so things are not normal down there anyway, but it could have some after effects. The other thing is they told her that she had metastatic cancer based on the scan, or she probably had it because they had to get permission to take out the lymph nodes.
You think that made her hate her tattoos?
I don't know. This is not the first time. According to this report, tattoo ink has been shown to appear in the regional nodes of people with breast cancer, melanoma. That's a tough one. What if you have melanoma and ink in your lymph nodes? Testicular cancer and some cancers of the squamous cell cancers as well. That ink migration makes it really difficult to differentiate between pigment and metastatic disease, resulting in an unnecessary treatment. Yet another interesting side effect of having tattoos. We're out of time. We're going to come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver.
A laughing Tony Weaver. I love to get you laughing right before we start the show.
Hey, the thing is, Rick has some opinions on Kim Kardashian and the pollution of the social media and its effects on today's youth. And it is surprising when we go to break exactly how he feels. He may actually be the one to send a comment to our Facebook page just to let me know that this was not a good thing. This is, however, the Salute to Kim Kardashian show, an American icon, sort of, and we're not say anything more about that.
I'm not allowed to talk anymore. You said that during the break.
Our sponsor for the second time, the Affordable Care Act.
At least you got the sequence right.
Cover cancer screening services. Who can say what the ACA will pay? And we talked last time about the Affordable Care Act. One of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act is there is no out-of-pocket cost if a person goes in-network, gets certain screening tests. And for breast cancer, again, ages 40 to 49, a mammogram every 1 to 2 years. For people ages 50 to 74, a mammogram every 2 years unless a doctor recommends more often. Also, the BRCA1 and 2 genes testing can be done for people with a family history. Cervical cancer, ages 21 to 29, pap smears every 3 years. Ages 30 to 65, pap smear every 3 years or every 5 years if you add HPV testing, which makes it a little more sensitive. For colon cancer screening, this is new. Age 50 to 75, you can get the stool test for blood, sigmoidoscopy, colonoscopy, and the sigmoidoscopy is every 5 years, colonoscopy every 10 years. There is also a fecal immunochemical test that can be done on a yearly basis as well. As of January 2016, the loopholes have been removed for FIT follow-up and polyp removal. Here's the thing. If right now, until January 2016, if you got screened by a fecal occult blood test, which is it's a dirt cheap test, and you were positive, then your colonoscopy is actually not a screening test. It is a diagnostic test for blood in your stool. So my recommendation would be to get the screening colonoscopy, not the fecal blood test, because your insurance will pay for one or the other as a screening test, but not both. See, if you have positive blood in your stool, then the colonoscopy is no longer a screening test. It is a diagnostic test for why is that blood there. Whereas if you just go straight to the colonoscopy, it's a screening test.
Hmm.
So it's tricky until January 2016. And supposedly in January 2016, if you get the fecal occult blood test and it's positive, you will have the colonoscopy paid for as a part of the package of screening for colon cancer. Lung cancer screening, we talked about this several times in the past month. Ages 55 to 80, low-dose CAT scans every year for people with 30-pack year history, that is 30 years of smoking one pack a day, and they have quit less than 15 years ago. Medicare, of course, will pay for ages 55 to 77. Insurance companies 55 to 80, 30 years of smoking a pack a day and quit less than 15. But you have to talk with your doctor, share decision-making on that, as we discussed last time. HPV vaccination, human papillomavirus vaccination. This virus causes over 90% of cervical cancers, and it may very well be playing a role in the rise in mouth cancers, oral cancers, that we've seen lately. Without copays, your insurance, the Affordable Care Act, mandates that your insurance for women ages 11 to 26, the three-dose series. For males ages 11 to 26, the three-dose series. And again, protects against genital warts, anal cancers, and also possibly throat and mouth cancers and cervical cancer in women. This is something interesting, Rick, that I frankly did not know. The Affordable Care Act mandates that you get paid 90 days of medication and 4 counseling sessions, 10 minutes each, per quit attempt, 2 quit attempts per year for people who smoke. You can check with your insurance plan as far as medications. You can call 1-800-QUIT-NOW to get some additional information about stopping smoking. But again, if you smoke, Affordable Care Act says that your insurance with no out-of-pocket cost to you will pay for 90 days of medication, 4 greater than 10-minute counseling sessions per quit attempt, 2 quit attempts per year for smoking. So get help for your smoking. It is the single best thing you can do to lower your risk of cancer, and it is covered with no out-of-pocket costs from the Affordable Care Act. That's our sponsor, Covered Cancer Services. Who can say what the ACA will pay?
Hey.
Thank you. You catch me off guard. I'm getting ready to read the next thing, and you just yell, hey, at me.
Hey.
I don't understand. Who can say what the ACA will pay?
Hey.
Yes. I got it now.
No. See, you need to say something that rhymes. Let's see. It's get in the game. What are you doing? Just get in the game.
Okay, I got nothing. All right. I'm not a real spontaneous kind of guy. I'm sorry you put me on the spot and things don't go well.
Can you imagine keeping up with the Weavers?
Fairly easy to do, I would say.
They don't have TV.
6 million. You're not looking to...
They've got rabbit ears.
They've got rabbit ears. It'd be very simple. Rick, do you have any superpowers?
Yes, but I can't tell you.
I find that paper towel dispensers find me invisible.
Really?
Yeah, I can wave my hand. Nothing happens. Completely invisible to paper towel dispensers. That's one.
Well, you got little hands.
Yes. Forest animals tell me that I'm the only one who can prevent forest fires. That's a superpower.
No.
I can prevent
forest.
No,
it's not.
I am the only one.
Have you seen any? Well, that's,
only
those,
I.
Those are brown bears.
Prevent forest
fires. Have you seen any black bears?
No. All right. Go ahead.
No.
You got the microphone.
No.
Yeah. We've got black bears here in town.
On the interstate.
Right.
Or on the road, the bypass.
On the bypass here in Moorhead.
You know, it didn't look that healthy. It looked kind of thin in the pictures. Made me wonder.
And you would think that Moorhead garbage would keep a black bear fat.
Well,
For our radio fans that are out of state or those who haven't been checking the news lately, black bears have been sighted on the what we call the connector.
It's 32. It's Kentucky 32.
Kentucky 32. Just outside of downtown Moorhead. Still within the city limits.
Within the city limits.
That's right. And the local TV station in Lexington used video footage or photograph of this bear. And so we have bears, but they're not terribly healthy bears. But back to superpowers, I have the forest fire thing. I've got the invisibility, at least where paper towel dispensers are concerned, and I am not allergic to poison ivy. That's my three superpowers. Do you have a superpower? You're not going to say it on the air.
No.
because you don't want people to. I mean, how, what am I going to call if I, what kind of signal do I put up?
Maybe I'm the only one who thinks it's super.
Well, then it's not much of a superpower. I think it has to be a generally acknowledged superpower.
It is to me.
People have to put up a RIC signal to call you in to use your superpower, or otherwise it's
Tony,
not a superpower.
I have the power to walk into a room, and if somebody's having a computer problem and they tell me about it, when I get there, it doesn't exist anymore.
This one.
You know it because I've done it to you.
That's true. You do have that. And it is a superpower. If I can't get my computer fixed, you are beyond mortal man in terms of fixing stuff. This was June 11th, New England Journal of Medicine, though. How about the superpower of CPR?
As in the band, or are you talking about like cardiopulmonary
resuscitation? Absolutely so. This group, and this was from Stockholm County in Sweden, they postulized that what if we used a mobile phone positioning system to dispatch people who are trained in CPR. In other words, if they got a 911 call, and whatever their system is for 911, if they got a call for a person who had a cardiac arrest, they would obviously call the ambulance to go to attend to that person, but they would also basically send out the bat signal for anyone who was within 500 meters of that person. Now, they developed the positioning system. They started recruiting people through advertising campaigns, and also if you attended a CPR training course, they ask if you would mind giving them your cell phone signal, your cell phone number, so they could put you on their list. They got 6,000 lay volunteers trained in CPR, and by the end of their study, which was a couple of years, they were up to almost 10,000 people. 48% men, 52% women. So a lot of men and women trained in CPR were at the ready for whenever there was a 911 call.
Okay.
They had 667 people with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. These are, you know, basically people who dropped down on the sidewalk or in their home. And they split them up half and half. And half the time, they called the ambulance like they always did. And half the time, they activated the CPR signal. They checked to see if there was someone whose cell phone was within 500 meters. The people that they did the phone initiation, 62%
lived
of those patients got CPR.
Okay.
48% and the old system did. So they were able to jump it from 48% to 62%, basically a 14% jump in the rate of getting CPR. Now, they did not. Your question is, well, didn't more people live? Not in this study. The odds ratio, they were 1.8 times more likely to get CPR, but that CPR did not in this study. And it's, again, it was 600 arrests. That's a pretty small number to show an improvement in life expectancy.
Yeah, but you know, Tony, this is a tough thing because you're trying to figure out how to get the right help at the as fast as possible, right? I mean, that's when somebody has a coronary, you know, whenever somebody has a cardiac problem, time is the biggest killer, right? So no matter what, you got to solve the time issue, which is this is attempting to do, right?
Right.
The problem is attempting to do it with somebody who may or may not know anything more than how to do CPR. And in some cases, they're going to get called to a scene and the CPR isn't necessarily going to be what saves the patient.
Right.
And so I think, you know, this is a weird trade-off. You know, I see what they're trying to do. You can see the hypothesis that they came to is get people to the scene faster, get them doing something to keep the heart going. But when you peel back the onion, I think the numbers may reflect that they won't actually save more lives. They'll just have faster responses.
It's a good question. They in their discussion, they say about 40% of all out-of-hospital cardiac arrests, first responders get there before an ambulance. So, again, in their numbers, they were able to increase it up to 60, which is a pretty good deal.
You going
to
let me tell a story?
Sure.
So I'm driving home, and you know I have a 70-mile commute, right? So I'm on the interstate. We get one of the typical summer afternoon downpours on the way home, right? So that was it. It was actually last week, interestingly enough, on the same day we typically record the radio show. We did not record last week, so whatever. I'm coming home a little early, pours down raining, right? So I'm on the interstate. All of a sudden, I look up, and there's cars all around me. Brake lights are flying on. There's a school bus involved, and a car literally hydroplaned off the side of the road to the right, hit the wall of the mountain coming down the hill on the interstate, flipped over three times, and landed on its side. So I'm now officially a first responder.
Right.
Right? These two gentlemen both were wearing their seatbelt and walked away from the event. It was absolutely amazing. But nonetheless, you're saying right then and there, I could have been a CPR person had they have had a cardiac problem.
And had you known CPR, which
I do.
You do.
Well, okay. I mean, I did. I haven't worked in a hospital in 8 years, so it's somewhat. I mean, I know how to do it. I'm sure there's been some number changes. Instead of 5, it's probably 12. And
yeah, some number changes.
Yeah, there's probably some repetition.
couple of interesting things. More than two-thirds of the cases, the arrests occurred in the patient's home. So this, again, this positioning system, they felt was a pretty good idea. One of the impressive things about it, 10,000 people voluntarily joined this program, no financial compensation, and made their gift, their powers of being able to perform basic life support, CPR, available to their neighbors, people in their community, which is pretty neat.
And it's certainly admirable, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
You know, that is somebody who leads a life of service, and those are the people you want around, and we need those people in the world. And I'm not saying that what they're doing isn't a wonderful thing. I'm saying sometimes it's hard if you don't have the right person on the scene.
Right. But to me, I think we've got to the point where we leave a lot of stuff to professionals. We've talked about not on this show, but in society, we've talked about what happens when we leave policing and law enforcement to professionals, and we just call them in when there's something happening rather than actually making them a part of the community. This leads to some abuses of law enforcement and problems there. And so I think the idea of people actually helping each other, maybe they didn't see outcome in 600 cases, and maybe you think, well, after 600 cases, isn't it time to stop? As a health person, you know, if you can save, again, doing CPR, you may be able to save a life. And you could do that for free. You got no adverse effects reported in this in 600 cases. It'd be a nice thing to do.
Absolutely. I mean, and throw the technology behind this, Tony. So more than likely, this person that's helping has got a cell phone, right? So what if this is something that's coming. The world needs to figure, I mean, we need to understand this is coming. There is a next generation 911 system that is being developed right now and in some places deployed. It will be tied into the digital, you know, universe. It will tie into various applications that you can run on your smart device, and you could actually not only have a video up, but you could actually be with a dispatcher and an emergency room right then and there. So maybe the responder right now may not be able to do much, but what I'm getting to is eventually we're going to put the tool in their hand to get them what they need when they need it to do what they need to do.
Right. And I think the reason I couch this in terms of superpowers is I can see the day, and you and I just...
So I have a smartphone. Is that a superpower?
We went to the exact same position on this. I think we will assemble teams where they are needed.
Right.
And if that is at the side of the patient, then that's at the side of the patient. We will not necessarily have the team motor out to the patient if there is an assemblable, if that's a word, team right there beside them. We will employ that team rather than dispatching one from somewhere else pre-assembled. We, in fact, could create teams of healthcare professionals, teams of advanced life support and basic life support professionals right there in the neighborhood, which would be kind of exciting.
Right.
Next up, talking about cool, this is an article in Schizophrenia Research that frankly just bowled me over. I've already discussed it.
Is that the best analogy you could, or the best thing you could say to describe it?
Yes.
You couldn't pick something funny?
No, it's not funny.
Okay.
The question.
Why do you bring stuff on
this
here?
Article? Well, because it's weird and amazing. Is childhood cat ownership a risk factor for schizophrenia? Let me say that again, just for our radio fans.
Do children don't own cats?
Is childhood cat ownership a risk factor for schizophrenia? Who owns the cat, Rick? I really don't care if it's the kid or the parents.
But you said owner.
Yeah, because that's the title of the article.
And is it the cat a kid, or is the kid have the cat?
Now, what they did is really interesting. There is an organization called the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. It's called NAMI. And they had a convention back in 1982.
Okay.
Long time ago.
I was in high school.
Participants whose family members were diagnosed with schizophrenia filled out a two-page questionnaire. I had questions on birth rate, smallpox vaccination, seizures, illnesses immediately preceding it, and cat and dog ownership up to age 17. So they could actually look and see whether these teenagers owned cats. Now, they got to compare that to something. Where can we find people who didn't have schizophrenia and figure out if they own cats? It happens. They stumbled on a 1991 survey of 55,000 households by the American Veterinary Medical Association on pet ownership. They were obviously interested in seeing what percent of people own what type of pets to help their members. And so now we have cat ownership among the parents of schizophrenic kids, kids who wound up having schizophrenia, and cat ownership among people who didn't have schizophrenia.
Well, or they could or couldn't. They didn't know, right?
Right.
Or are they sure they didn't have it?
They, that's a good question. I don't think they actually looked at diseases with the other one. This was,
so this one was just normal and the other one was controlled.
Well, what they had was the National Association of, people who went to the National Association of Mental Illness with a schizophrenic person in the family versus average American families.
Average American family.
Who could have a schizophrenic person or not, but the rate of schizophrenia shouldn't be any more than average.
Gotcha.
They wound up with 2,000 1982 questionnaires from the NAMI families, 46 states plus D.C., and they found that 51% of them own cats. 51% of the NAMI families
so,
with
so
a member
almost
with schizophrenia.
Better than a coin flip.
Yep. Now, if you look at the veterinary parents, the parents from the veterinary survey, 42% owned a cat.
Okay.
51% versus 42%.
So is that significantly different?
Or significantly different when you get thousands of questionnaires and you get that that difference between the two.
So can you adequately describe to me the statistical statistical significance of this in 30 seconds or less?
Yes, I can. Highly significant. Chi squared 38. Odds ratio 1.38. And it is significant at the P of 0.0001 level. You could not do any better than that. We can do better. We're going to come back with our third fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. We call this our Salute to Kim Kardashian show because we hope that we will have outraged NPR listeners hitting our Facebook page and maybe it will give it some actual traffic.
We're going to break the internet.
I don't think this show. Really don't think that's possible with this show. For the final time.
Only thing we're going to break is your will, right?
That's right. I'm not even going to dignify that with a reply. That's what I'm saying, and I'm sticking to it. Our sponsor for the final time, Cover Cancer Screening Services. Who can say what the ACA will pay?
Hey.
Thank you. What the ACA will pay, the Affordable Care Act, your insurance policy should cover with no out-of-pocket cost to you.
Hey, hey.
Breast cancer screening, ages 40 to 49, mammogram every 1 to 2 years. Ages 50 to 74, mammogram every 2 years, unless the doctor says more. BRCA, that's the cancer gene, number 1 and 2, genetic testing for people with a family history. Might cover self-referral, might cover ultrasound for women with dense breast tissue. Check with your healthcare provider on that. Cervical cancer screening, ages 21 to 29, pap smear every 3 years, ages 30 to 65, pap smear every 3 years or every 5 years with HPV testing. Colon cancer screening, ages 50 to 75, the stool blood test, the stool immunochemical test, sigmoidoscopy probably every 5 years, colonoscopy every 10 years. The problem right now is if you get the blood test and your stool and it's positive, the colonoscopy would be a diagnostic test and not covered. They fixed that as of January 2016, but for 2015, our recommendation is to look at the colonoscopy because you could wind up being on the hook for the colonoscopy to investigate the positive screening blood test. And so you got free some cards to put your stool on. You have to pay out of pocket for the colonoscopy. Doesn't make sense to us. Lung cancer screening, ages 55 to either 77 or 80, depending on which insurance plan. Low dose CAT scans every year, if you smoked for 30 years a pack a day and you quit less than 15 years ago, talk to your doctor about this. Shared decision making. You have to make an attempt to stop smoking if you're still smoking. Written order from your healthcare provider. Lots of caveats, but it looks like, as we mentioned, a good screen. HPV vaccination could prevent cervical cancer, genital warts, anal cancer, possibly throat and mouth cancers. For women ages 11 to 26, the 3-dose series. For men ages 11 to 26, the 3-dose series. Paid for with no out-of-pocket cost. A nice one here, smoking cessation. If you are a smoker, you can make 2 quit attempts per year with 90 days of medication and 4 counseling sessions greater than 10 minutes each per quit attempt, 2 quit attempts each year. Those are your no out-of-pocket cancer screening and prevention measures from your Affordable Care Act, our sponsor, who can say what the ACA will pay. When our last time we had,
thank you.
Do you want, who can say what the ACA will pay?
Hey,
we'll get this right eventually. I like that you're participating. This is great. I just had hoped to get a little bit more than that. Last time, when we took a break, we were reviewing an article from Schizophrenia Research. They looked at questionnaires from the National Alliance for Mental Illness and compared them to a veterinary questionnaire, and they found that the people in the National Alliance for Mental Illness, the ones who had children with schizophrenia, had a 9% plus more likely chance of owning a cat. And this, there have been three studies now that show that owning a cat is associated with higher rates of schizophrenia. Now, what's going on? That's the big question. Why would cat ownership cause or increase your risk of schizophrenia? First of all, we don't know that it does. For all you cat owners out there, we don't know that it increases your risk. The other thing is schizophrenia is not a common condition, but it is a thing to think about. And the mechanism, and this is according to New Scientist, May 29th this year, there is something called toxoplasmosis. Now, we all know this. This is a protozoan. It's a parasite. It affects lots of birds and mammals. It reproduces sexually in cats. People get it if they eat undercooked meat, unwashed fruit, and vegetables, or from, and this is the big deal, cleaning the litter trays of cats who have recently been infected. Now, we all know, we've all heard this, if you are pregnant, if you have an immune disorder like HIV or you have a transplant, you should not be messing with cat litter because it can be fatal to a fetus or someone with a compromised immune system. For most of us, though, if we were to get toxoplasmosis, we think you would only get a flu-like illness, sort of like a lot of things. It makes you feel bad for a little bit, and then there.
It's like health matters.
Right. We only cause minor symptoms for a short period of time, and then we go dormant.
You feel better eventually.
Yeah, until next Saturday. And no, the neat thing is no medication is needed for health matters.
Absolutely.
Or toxoplasmosis.
And no headache after.
That's right. Only supportive illness. Now, here's the thing. This is the scary thing. Toxoplasmosis, we may never even know we have it, but these parasites enter our brains and make a cyst, and they sit there and they don't do anything. So the idea was, well, okay, you see those little toxoplasmosis cysts, but let's face it, they don't do anything. 2 billion people worldwide carry toxoplasmosis, maybe twice that. We're not really sure. There is a antibody present in the blood, so you can figure it out. Now, here's the interesting thing. It messes with the minds of mice.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, there's an evolutionary biologist, and I won't even say her name. Her last name looks like Flegger, at Charles University in Prague, Czech Republic. In 1994, she reported that men who were infected with toxoplasmosis, they took the blood test to check and be sure, they were more likely to disregard rules. They were excessively suspicious or jealous. That is, there were mental health changes on people who were blood test positive for toxo. In 2002, and this is when she started to get some attention, she tested people who were responsible for traffic accidents in Prague or toxoplasmosis infection. Car drivers and pedestrians who were injured on the city's roads were more than twice as likely to be infected with toxoplasmosis.
Ooh.
Yes. Guy named Glenn McConkey, University of Leeds, UK. Sorry, not University of Kentucky, but Leeds, United Kingdom, in Great Britain. They were looking at the toxoplasma gene, and they found it carried a couple of genes that would help produce dopamine.
Wow.
Why does a parasite need dopamine? Maybe to mess with your brain. The way this thing works, the way they think, is it makes these mice more aggressive, less inhibited, and they get eaten by cats, which is exactly what the parasite wants.
Up until eating with cats, I thought you were talking about booze.
Yeah. Well, it may raise the testosterone levels. That's another theory. But for whatever reason, toxoplasmosis needs to be in cats in order to breed and reproduce.
Right.
So once it gets into a mouse or another mammal, it needs to get that mammal inside a cat in order to finish the job. And maybe then, as a byproduct of us being around cats, we are getting our brains changed as well.
Oof.
And maybe, these are a bunch of maybes, maybe that's why schizophrenia is more common among cat owners. So last paragraph. After, how worried should we be? Well, the link between toxoplasmosis, traffic accidents, schizophrenia, maybe other mental illness, huge economic impact. But, you know, the other thing that's kind of interesting is if this parasite actually made you less fearful,
ooh,
might be a good thing.
Superhero power.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talked about maybe you'd be the one to jump in and do CPR, or you could be like me and prevent forest fires. That's a superpower that I have. I don't know. Rick, I get this sort of stuff. You know, this comes across your desk, and sometimes this just seems too crackpot to be believed. Now, keep in mind,
and the fact that we're presenting it helps that theory.
I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to argue. It does seem like a very odd thing that a parasite might have an effect. But it's very clear that parasites can affect the host mentally. And keep in mind, this thing does bury itself in your brain. And we thought that's just where it wound up and it lay dormant. But the possibility is that maybe it does more than that. I think as a practical matter, I wouldn't worry too much about this right now. But I have seen in the case of, for instance, ulcers, we thought ulcers were due to stress and worry and stomach acid. And then we found a germ called Helicobacter, which led to higher rates of ulcers. So sometimes we can be surprised at what infectious conditions can do. And toxoplasmosis is certainly an infection condition. I think I'd wear gloves when I change the kitty litter. I think I think that's pretty much where I would leave it right now. But there's some very interesting research going on about toxoplasmosis, cats, and schizophrenia.
Yeah, it's...
What I like is
it's an odd topic,
you know. And the reason I included that was to shut you up, because I figured, I mean, you've got lots of opinions on Kim Kardashian, but I thought there's no way he's going to have an opinion on cats and schizophrenia. I said this is one that will shut Rick up.
Tony, do you have any cats?
No. Well, I got outdoor cats.
Does that count?
No, because yes, I don't does. Change. No, I don't change. Outdoor cats don't have litter.
Okay, but you're still around. So,
there's an interesting question. I got to say there's an interesting question, because after all, outdoor cats like to go in the sandbox.
Right.
That's what they do. And kids play in the sandbox. So what was interesting, they said, is look at the difference here, and imagine all the kids that from other families that played in the sandbox, and yet still we could tease out this difference. Because if anything, we're underestimating the effect of cat ownership because of that. Now, I don't play in the sandbox anymore. I don't think I've ever been toxoplasmosis infected, but it would be hard for me to know. I don't do the high-risk behaviors, which is indoor cat ownership, changing the litter, or eating undercooked meat. Not a big undercooked meat guy.
Really?
Yeah. So that's me.
What constitutes undercooked? Medium or less? Medium well
rare.
Or less?
No, I think rare.
Okay.
You think rare? I don't know.
No, I always say undercooked. You're the smart one.
And so how long do you have to cook meat to kill the toxoplasmosis? Not in my immediate
recall. Are you a medium well guy?
I am a medium well guy.
Yeah, you look like a medium well guy.
You're rare.
No.
No, you, it's not true. You worked at a steak place.
Correct.
And I always thought people who worked at a steak place liked their meats a little bit less cooked.
I can go anywhere between medium rare, medium, or medium well. I usually, in a restaurant, will order it medium so that if it comes out medium rare or medium well, I still eat it. If you order it medium rare, it can come out sometimes too rare. And so some places are really good at cooking it, some places aren't. But
yeah, I don't know why they call it rare.
I don't know, but you think
what's the opposite of well? Well, of course, it's rare. That doesn't make any sense.
You ever heard of blue rare?
You're the steak guy, man. I have.
We would have people come in and order a steak blue rare, which in Arizona was the legal minimum you could cook a steak or a piece of meat before you could serve it. And it was 10 seconds per side.
And so what's blue about that?
Because next time you're cooking a steak, get your pan really hot and take the steak and lay it in the pan. Count to 10, take a fork, pick it up and look at it, and where you've set it down in there will look blue.
Okay.
It will look blue, and that's where they come up with the blue rare.
I guarantee
but that in Arizona is the legal, in 1985, 86,
when you were
when I was a steak cook at Golden Corral, that was the legal, people could ask for tartar or rare or raw. We were not allowed legally to serve that. We had to cook it at least 10 seconds per side.
I've learned something new here. I will tell you, 10 seconds is not going to kill toxoplasmosis. That is,
it does give it a nice tint of blue, though.
Fair enough. Give me 3 minutes. Can you give me 3 minutes?
As long as I don't have to do push-ups while you're doing
Nation's sickest seniors reshaping healthcare. This is USA Today, but it has a Kentucky connection. Here's the problem, Rick. Baby boomers are getting into their older years, their Medicare years.
Well, they're
right?
Not boomers anymore. They're
baby echoers because the boom's gone.
Yeah, well,
I guess so. The problem is, by just about, well, certainly by medical diagnosis, they are sicker than the preceding generation. They're living longer. So the problem is they've got the diabetes, the asthma, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart failure, depression, Alzheimer's disease for many years, maybe decades, and we are not prepared as a medical system. We are not prepared financially for these sick elderly people. Here's the numbers. About 15% of Medicare beneficiaries account for half of the spending. These are the people with chronic illnesses. Two-thirds have multiple chronic conditions. More than 4 million, about 15%, have at least 6 long-term ailments. If you have those 6 long-term ailments, those are the one that are we're going to spend half of our total Medicare dollars on those 15%. 10,000 seniors cost Medicare 10,000. Of the sickest seniors cost Medicare $1 billion a year. Dana King, family
billion
physician.
Billion with a B, right?
Yep. And researcher at West Virginia, he says if they are even if baby boomers were just as healthy as the previous generation, we'd be in trouble because there's so many of them, but they are not. So kidney disease, depression, high cholesterol, double-digit increases in the past 10 years. More than half of beneficiaries have been diagnosed with high blood pressure, 27% with diabetes, more than 10,000 people turning 65 each day. This is going to be a healthcare nightmare. I mean, the cost of it alone, the strain on facilities and on providers, we are not in any way prepared to this. Here's what Gerard Anderson, professor at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, says. It's going to be a shock. The healthcare system not oriented toward their needs. The average elderly patient, Rick, five or more chronic conditions. These are the six chronic conditions people sees 13 doctors a year, fills 50 prescriptions a year. That's the average person. And again, we talked about 15%.
Did you say how many prescriptions?
50 prescriptions filled. Now, that could be refills, but still, 50 prescriptions per year.
For the average?
Average elderly patient with five or more chronic conditions.
Ooh.
That is 15% of seniors have five or more conditions, will see 13 doctors, will fill 50 prescriptions. And even if you were young and healthy and your brain was intact, managing 13 different doctors and their recommendations would be difficult. And these doctors are not talking to each other.
Yeah, of course not. I mean, it's very difficult for that to happen. I mean, you know, anyway, that sounds rough.
It really does. Now, the Courier-Journal here in Louisville looked at Kentucky data from the same database. Kentucky's top 10 counties for sick seniors, nine of them are in our region, in eastern Kentucky. All the 10 are ranked in the nation's top 50. So put it this way. The nation has 50 top counties with the sickest seniors. 10 of those 50 are in the state of Kentucky.
Wow.
And I've got them listed here. Clay County, 27% have more than six chronic conditions. Breath at 26%. Johnson, 26.2. Knott, 25.1. Perry, 24.6. Letcher, 24.2. Bell, 24%. Floyd, 23.8. Wolf, 23.7. Taylor, 23.6%. Of the citizens in those counties have six or more chronic conditions, and this is one of the reasons why Kentucky's healthcare dollars are going to be going there. And the thing is, many of these are counties that do not have the healthcare facilities to manage these six chronic conditions. They do not have the healthcare personnel. And so you can see why, with that many chronic conditions, it's a result, let's face it, there's some lifestyle issues there, but there's going to be some major access issues for these people, major spending issues for these counties because of the number of people with chronic conditions. Not a good situation. Nope. Speaking of bad situations, we've gone on too long.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Spencer Johnson and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember, more than 60 million people in the U.S. listen to Health Matters. Most of them don't get sick, but our show causes serious problems for some people, including people with weak immune systems, babies whose mothers have become infected for the first time during pregnancy. Problems with Health Matters can include damage to the brain, eyes, and other organs. You can get Health Matters infection from
touching waste from an infected cat,
eating contaminated meat that is raw or not well cooked,
using utensils or cutting boards after they've had contact with contaminated raw meat,
drinking infected water,
receiving an infected organ transplant or blood transfusion.
Most people who listen to Health Matters don't need treatment. Let me say that again. Most of you will not need treatment. There are drugs to treat Health Matters for pregnant women and people with weak immune systems.
Some experts suggest waiting for 6 months after a recent show before becoming pregnant.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for the Big Box of Toxo show from Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.